Thanks, Nadia. While we are, of course, focused on the ongoing horrific events playing out in Ukraine, we're still seeing COVID deaths in our region and across the nation, with New York State reporting a dozen deaths and with four confirmed deaths here in New Jersey, where I'm broadcasting from. Across the country, we're close to 1 million reported COVID-linked deaths, and we're still averaging close to 1,200 deaths weekly. Over the weekend, it's been reported that there's been a spate of shootings of homeless people in New York City and Washington, D.C. And on the more hopeful side of life, the FDNY will hold a graduation ceremony for 152 probationary emergency medical technicians and 24 paramedics, and a promotion ceremony for 55 EMS officers later this morning at 10 a.m. at the Christian Cultural Center in the Flatlands Avenue, Brooklyn. We need every one of them and then some. We'll be back with COBA Vice President Williams after this from Blondie. Just am honored to be joined by Corrections Officers Benevolent Association Third Vice President Keisha Williams. Good morning.
Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Great. I watched your compelling testimony earlier this month in front of the New York State Senate about the rampant sexual assault of female correction officers in the New York City jail system. But first, tell us about your career path to corrections.
Well, my path to the law enforcement started with the New York City Police Department as a civilian, and my title at that time was a police administrative aide. I worked as a police administrative aide for 4 years and went on to take the exam for police officer / correction officer. Currently, I've been a correction officer for 22 years. After completing the academy, I was assigned to Rikers Island supervising inmates.
Wow. And so what motivated you to get involved in the union?
What motivated me to get involved in a reunion? I have considered myself, Bob, to be a very vocal advocate for issues I care most deeply about. And having been a correction officer for so many years, I care very deeply about the rights and working conditions of my brothers and sister officers. I decided that it was time to bring my passion for my fellow officers to a leadership position with COBA by running for delegate. While working as a delegate, Bob, I felt the previous executive board had neglected the worsening working conditions our officers were subjected to, including increased inmate assault, including sexual assault, and working grueling double and triple shifts without meals and rest. So I decided to join a team running for the COBA executive board with the same passion as I had. And in June of 2020, I was elected third vice president.
Wow. And so I guess give folks a sense of who are correction officers. I don't think people are aware of the significant role that women and people of color play in running the institution. Give us a profile. Who is the average CO?
Well, in the New York City correction workforce, it's the most diverse uniform force in the city of New York. Approximately 85% of our correction officers are Black and Hispanic, and almost 50%, Bob, are female. Our members also comprise the second largest law enforcement union in New York City.
Wow. Now, so in terms of also setting the scene within which this horrendous trend of sexual assault was happening, historically, we've seen that under-resourced situation for corrections, where you guys have turned into the ad hoc mental health facility because the nation and state and city, to a large degree, roll back any kind of structural, we call it so many psychiatric centers, and we committed to open up local neighborhood facilities, community-based, but that never happened. And so as a consequence, you're dealing with a multitude of problems. And then we had this situation with the pandemic. And even before the pandemic, as you mentioned, there was the very oppressive mandatory overtime because the powers that be scheduled the budget so tight. Can you talk? So that's the I'm getting the context, right? That's the setting within which these assaults are occurring.
And yes, Bob. Yes. Having a lack of staff and officers are extremely tired, exhausted. So by us having the lack of officers working, the conditions are worse. And it's very hard for us, extremely hard for us.
And so what was, I mean, this is not something that's abstract to you. Within, you know, if you feel comfortable talking about why this issue is so important to you and what you think needs to be done. Well, first answer that question about your experience of this and the response of the institutions.
Well, as far as my experience in sexual assault, in 2016, Bob, I was sexually assaulted. And it's hard for me to talk about it, but it happened to me. And I was forcibly touched. My breast was forcibly touched. And immediately I felt violated. I felt humiliated. I felt ashamed. I was in a complete, total shock. And I was asking myself, how could this happen to me? And why did this happen to me? And I experienced nightmares. I experienced anxiety. I experienced guilt and other forms of PTSD. And my assailant was only given a slap on the wrist and even discharged the very next day while never being fully charged with an actual sexual assault.
Well, and so one of the things that you mentioned, though, is that this trend of looking the other way has continued. And there was some statistics you used in the testimony that I saw about what's happening currently, even in this year.
Yes. Since January 1st of 2021, 22 correction officers had been sexually assaulted by inmates, and only about half of their assailants had been indicted for their crimes. Every single day, female correction officers are sexually harassed and exposed to inmates making lewd gestures and even masturbating in front of them. This disgusting culture, Bob, of harassment and sexual violence against our members went ignored for years until I was elected third vice president along with my two partners, First Citywide trustee Asaki Antoine and our corresponding secretary, Antoinette Anderson, and we set out on a mission to not only expose the culture of sexual assault and sexual harassment in our jails, but to also do something about it.
Oh, man. And it sounds to me like historically, and this is something why, you know, Women's History Month, it's not just historic figures, but people that are living today that are struggling to deal with the patriarchy. I mean, that's what we're talking about here. And it sounds like there was a legacy of a good old boy culture that to some degree, as I said at the top, implicated the mindset of the union and management.
Yes, and it's heartbreaking because it was, like you said, everyone just turned a blind eye. We were just so accustomed, it was the norm. And these sexual predators are not held accountable. And enough is enough. This has to stop.
And so, listeners, if you want to have some insights, 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. If you're a woman who's experienced this kind of structural issues at work, and whether you're represented by a union or not, if you could tell Keisha, what needs to be done proactively at this point? What is it that COBA is looking for?
Well, we are, like as I mentioned in the testimony before the state senate, the most important way, Bob, to address these issues is by increasing the penalties for the forcible touching of a New York City correction officer. There must be significant consequences for these types of crimes. And that's exactly why COBA, with the support of Assemblyman David Wefferin and Senator Diane Savino, introduced legislation in Albany that would, for the first time, make the forcible touching of a New York City correction officer a felony instead of a misdemeanor. This must stop, Bob. And if it can't stop, if legislators pass this Senate bill, S8027, and Governor Hochul must sign it into law immediately. The Me Too movement must also include New York City voters, us too, Bob, who put our lives on the line every day keeping New Yorkers safe, but it's time for New York to keep us safe and protect us from sexual predators.
Callers 212-209-2877. If you have something to add to this conversation, if you're a woman that has been dealing with systemic issues of sexism, it can range from, you know, the toleration of harassment, the issues of, you know, criminal behavior that often gets just swept under the rug. Keisha, if you could give us a sense of the broader challenge of corrections. I mean, we are seeing in the paper this terrible story over the weekend about the homeless individuals being targeted. It appears that it's upon Corrections Watch that we want you all to address the things we refuse to deal with as society. And that includes the mental health issue, poverty, the extreme wealth inequality. And so the justice system lands all of this in your lap. What are some of the things people need to know about the job so they can have a better understanding of what's going on there at Rikers?
Well, as far as the mental health issue is concerned, it's very heartbreaking. And it's so sad that these individuals are not getting the proper care that they need. And being locked up in a jail with your mental issues is very difficult. They need to have facilities just for mental health individuals, because those issues are very challenging. And it breaks my heart that this city has allowed this culture to go on like this.
Right.
And something needs to be done now in regards to mental health. And unfortunately, locking these individuals up is not the key. They need outside help. They need outside facilities to address this. People who know what they're doing.
Well, and also I was wondering, one of the things that's happened about this business of mandatory overtime, has there been any improvement on that? I know that in my reporting on this in the past, one of the things that's happened is the injury rate among corrections officers, and this comes up, this is costly, not just for the workers and their families in terms of the impact on correction officers, but for the city in terms of for the entire worker comp system, because we know from occupational health research that when you work tired, it's the equivalent of being intoxicated. That's what the research tells us. Is that still happening like it was? Has there been, I know there was some press that indicated that your union was successful towards the end of de Blasio. Is there still mandatory overtime? Is that still an issue?
Yes, that's still a pressing issue. Every day officers are working 3 out of 3, 4 out of 4s, triple, sometimes quadruple shifts, and they're exhausted, Bob. They're exhausted. And you know, officers are behind these gates dealing with their own personal issues, because they have families to go home to. And so now you're here doing all this overtime, and you're trying to stay focused and have care, custody, control behind the gates. And it's very difficult when you haven't received the proper rest. And use of the forces are high. Officers are getting assaulted by the numbers. They're experiencing broken noses, broken eye sockets. And this is insane. Even to the inmates are not even safe. Inmates are needed to do their time and go home. And they are experiencing these things as well. So everyone is affected. Civilians, correction officers, and inmates.
We do have one caller on the line. Caller, where are you calling from? What's your name and what's on your mind?
Hey, this is TK. I'm calling from Rockland County. I got a question slash comment. Oh, thank you for your guests. Thank you, guests, for being on the show.
You're welcome. Thank you.
My thing is this. There's so much sexual assault going on in these prisons and jails for the women, inmates as well as correction officers. So why are not all the female correction officers put in these female prisons and get these your co-workers out of there because they're raping the women? And maybe you won't have to be subjected to male masturbation if you are in a female prison, and the females won't be subjected to getting raped by CEOs because there will be female officers.
Thanks, TK. That's great. That's a very detailed question. That's an operational issue. Can you share that? I mean, that observation from the caller.
All I can say to the caller, when you sign up and take an oath as a New York City correction officer, the gender doesn't matter, male or female. So you are placed in the housing areas to do your job, which is care, custody, control of inmates. We don't come to work to be harassed, sexually assaulted, and we didn't sign up for that. We are city workers, and we come to do a job. Whether we are female or male, we're placed in the facilities to assist and take care of the inmates that are locked up, and we don't come to work, caller, to be sexually assaulted or sexually harassed.
Right.
Whether we're female or male.
And also, it's important to understand that the proportion of prisoners in the system are primarily male. And so there's also been a shortage of correction officers. What would you say to someone who, a young person, either out of the military or who's considering police work, if they want to go into corrections, what advice would you give to a woman? What do they need, aside from tremendous inner fortitude? What are the characteristics that you'd suggest that they take an inventory on and see if they possess them?
Well, I would encourage women and men to join the New York City Boldest as being a correction officer. It is truly a noble profession. We may never get the full recognition we deserve, but we are truly, truly, truly making a meaningful difference in the lives of others and saving the lives of others every single day.
And I guess also the thing is that it must be frustrating because the issues, you get a lot of headlines, but the day-to-day reality doesn't get the play that it should. And it would seem that if we wanted to get our arms around to crime reduction, we would have to have a system that was truly progressive. What are some of the ideas, some of the things that COBA sees that could improve the situation on the ground in Rikers? What are some of the things that people wouldn't occur to people that you, because you're there every day, are aware of?
Well, as I mentioned, in my testimony, before the state Senate, the most important way to address this issue is by increasing the penalties. That's what, for this forcible touching, this has to take place. Without increasing these penalties, we will be in the same place. Nothing will be done. And that's why we need this bill to be signed and passed through legislation. And we're hoping Governor Hochul will sign this bill immediately. That Senate bill number, I'm going to repeat it again, is S8027. And that's what we're pushing for. The change from a felony instead of a misdemeanor. We want a felony, not a misdemeanor, Bob. That's what we need.
Well, I'd also imagine it's budget season that you don't want to see short shrift given to corrections in light of the pandemic. You want to make sure that you have the personnel so that you can maintain the education and health services. That's something that a lot of people don't realize is that when they shortchange the correction officer staffing, they shortchange the programming that is available in these facilities to help inmates get a new start.
Exactly. And this has been going on for years under the last administration. and under the de Blasio administration. For whatever reason, you know, we weren't receiving help. And you need staffing. You need officers on the front lines in order for inmates to get their services as well, so everyone can be happy. So everyone can the inmates can come in, do their time, and go home to their family.
Well, and that's one of the things I saw from covering the TikTok of this is that the pandemic was made much worse by if you don't have staffing, you can't get people to be proactive with the healthcare. So it's a vicious cycle.
Yes, it is. And one of the biggest challenges for us during the pandemic was having to work triple and even quadruple shifts and being away from our loved ones for so long while also trying to fulfill our childcare needs as well. We were treated as expendable, not essential workers by the former mayor, and that took a very heavy toll on correction officers' lives.
Well, we're going to have you back to address the very important national issues when it comes to supporting women in the workforce. We know that close to 2 million women were forced out of the labor force because they were taking care of homeschooling or elder care. And I think that President Biden could very much benefit from a conversation with labor leaders like you that are reviving the labor movement about the essential need for things like, it's a little far afield, but universal pre-K, knowing, or even elder care, knowing that you could go do what the work the city of New York needs you to do, and that we really had your back. I think that, would you come back and talk about that?
Oh, I would love to, Bob. I appreciate that. Thank you for thinking of me.
Now, what are the coordinates so people can get in touch with you if they want to follow up?
Yes, my email is kwilliams, that's K-W-I-L-L-I-A-M-S, at COBA, which is COBANYC.org. I'll repeat it again, kwilliams at COBANYC.org.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Bob, for having me. I so appreciate you.
Great, thanks.
You're tuned to listener-sponsored WBAI New York with a moment in women's history.
If we do form a union, we are going to have a political force.
Since the 1950s, Dolores Huerta has been a grassroots organizer in the struggle for equality and civil rights.
People that aren't aware of labor relations don't realize why unions are important.
In the 60s, she co-founded the United Farm Workers and was the chair of contract negotiations.
You know, we did have a chance to sign a contract with the growers. Some of our liberal friends say, well, why didn't you sign that contract? It's a foot in the door is more important. Well, the reason that we didn't sign the contract is because the growers refused to put any protective language on the issue of poisons.
By the 70s, the Farm Workers Union led the charge against environmental racism and pollution with the campaign to ban the use of the pesticide DDT.
See, farm workers sort of took poisoning as a working condition, you know, the same way that they took a lack of a toilet or the lack of hand washing facilities or, you know, the bad treatment that you get. This was just an occupational you might say an ordinary thing.
At the time, a sampling showed 80% of farm workers, mostly grape pickers, as well as a large proportion of their children, were affected by DDT. They also found consumers were being affected by poison on the grapes that they were eating.
I think that the whole issue of pesticides that the union has taken on is an important one, because here we're taking on a basic issue that's not important. It's important not only to the farm worker, but to the consumer and also to the environment. And this is, I think, the union. We're certainly trying to make our union to be, to have a conscience, a social conscience that is larger than just the question of bread and butter.
Dolores Huerta later became a leader of the Feminist Majority's Feminization of Power campaign to inspire women, particularly Latina women, to run for public offices to reflect the diversity of the nation. She originated the Si Se Puede attitude, a personal and organizational spirit that promotes confidence, courage, hard work, and the belief that we can do the impossible, way before Barack Obama campaigned with the phrase, yes, we can. You can hear more from Dolores Huerta and other trailblazers by becoming a WBAI buddy, a sustaining member. For $15 or more a month, you'll receive our fabulous extensive women's history collection and our tote bag. Please go to women.wbai.org, women.wbai.org, to become a WBAI buddy in the name of your favorite program or in the name of all WBAI programs. Or please call 212-209-2950. Do it now. Call 212-209-2950 and say, yes, I want to become a WBAI buddy this Women's History Day.
As we go marching, marching, we're standing proud and tall. The rising of the women means the rising of us all. No more the drudge and idler, and a toil where one reposes, but a sharing of life's glories, bread and roses, bread and roses. Hearts starve as well as bodies, give us bread, but give us roses. Bread and roses, bread and roses.
Thanks so much for that, Linda. Just some phrases that came out of that great segment, taking, poisoning as a workplace condition, just another thing. This is the kind of things you hear only on BAI. I've been involved with Pacifica for many years, and BAI in particular. And I have my own premium for those of you who follow the show. It's a book called Stuck Nation. Can the United States change course on our history of choosing profits over people? With a generous foreword by my colleague, economist Rick Wolf. His Democracy Work published it. If you contribute $75 or become a BAI buddy in the name of the program, make sure that you have your address, and then I will make sure that I personally will address it, the USPS package, and get it to you. That's Stuck Nation. Can the United States change course on our history of choosing profits over people? We'll be back with Debbie Daughtry after this from the Kinks. Get back in line.